Daddy, Mommy's bleeding again. She needs some medicine. Why don't you go buy some for her?
I can't, kid. We're out of cash.
Out of cash? Well, what happened to all our money?
Spend it on razors, kid. I had to keep my face fully shaved for my job at the laundromat, and the only way I could do that is with the supremely overpriced razors at the local razor mart. Now we're broke and your mom's dying of Ebola.
But how did she get Ebola, Daddy? I don't understand.
She got Ebola by going to pick up razors for me at the local razor mart. She passed one of these aid workers who just returned from Africa. If your mother wasn't a chronic alcoholic, she might have noticed that the aid worker was showing the symptoms of Ebola. Bloody boils all over his arms and legs. Dilated eyes. Bloody diarrhea. He sneezed blood, ropey, bloody knots of parasite-filled snot right into her mouth as she was opening her mouth in shocked horror at the price of razors. She swallowed at least 3 ounces of Ebola mucus, and by the time she got home, she was already showing symptoms herself. And more than likely, we've all been infected too.
Oh no, Daddy. Are you saying that you and me and Mama are all gonna die of Ebola because of the overpriced razors down at the local razor mart?
Couldn't have said it better myself, kid. You and me and your mama are all gonna die of Ebola because of the overpriced razors down at the local razor mart. If only we'd used Harry Shave Club.
Today's episode of the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast is brought to you by Harry's Shave Club. There's no need to catch Ebola the next time you go to the local drugstore and get treated like a criminal as the manager comes out and use 7 keys to unlock the razor bin so that you can buy supremely overpriced razors when you can just go to harrys.com and use the promo code Family Hour and get $5 off your first purchase of German-engineered razor blades and amazing razor handles. You can even get your name engraved on the handle. Sign up for Harry's Shave Club. They'll deliver razors straight to your door. I know what you're thinking. I live right by a drugstore. Well, guess what? I live right by the Centers for Disease Control, but you don't see me breaking in the windows and snorting Ebola and various other forms of hemorrhagic fever. No, I don't want to go out among the people right now when one of the most deadly and horrible diseases is about to spread its dark, vile wings and fly around the planet, scooping up the souls of unwitting fools who wanted to pay $17 for a razor that would do the exact same thing that a razor from Harry's Shave Club can do for you. Go to harrys.com. Are you seriously spending your life energy being treated like you just broke out of Guantanamo Bay as some pasty-faced drugstore manager eyes you with suspicion as he's taking out his razor blades that had better been made out of bits of Roswell material if they're charging $14, $15, $18, probably $700 for some of these crap razors. Go to harrys.com. I've tried them. My face, even though I have a beard, I do shave the tiny little beautiful apples just above my beard. I don't know why I do it, but I like to have that area clean. Also, I have to shave the awful scruff of matted pubic hair that sprouts out around my neck and right underneath my chin, and I've used Harry's razors to do it and Harry's shaving cream to do it, and you get an excellent shave from this. I don't want to have one of those Magic the Gathering player necks. I like to have a nice, clean, smooth, beautiful neck so that my sweet darling, when she kisses me, doesn't have to feel like she's French kissing a cactus. Go to harrys.com. Check out these razors. They're awesome. For $15, you get a set that includes a handle, 3 blades, and shaving cream, and it gets shipped right to your door. These guys are disrupting the shaving industry. And that's a good thing. I don't know who these swine are who think that they can sell us these crappy, overpriced razors. Who are these people? I don't know. But we've got to tear them down from their ivory towers, drag them through the streets, bring them to the town square, and shave every bit of hair and flesh from their skin using Harry's Wonderful Razors. Have your razors ready for the revolution. Go to harrys.com, promo code FAMILYHOUR. You will get $5 off your first purchase. Let me reiterate, I used these before one of my very few TV appearances, and they do an excellent job. I don't promote anything on this podcast that I haven't used myself or wouldn't use, and I recommend them. If you want to experience it, it's like the old days when the creepy milk guy would bring a nice bottle of warm breast milk to your door, and you could pour it all over your body as you're saying the Pledge of Allegiance in the morning. It's the exact same thing. It's 2014 and we've returned back to those glorious days where you would open your door and there'd be a nice fresh steak and some razors and a glass of milk delivered to your door. You can have that experience again. Maybe not with the steak and milk, but at least with the razors. Go to harrys.com. $5 off your first purchase. Promo code FAMILYHOUR. And if you're really having a moment of wanting to have your initials on everything around your house, which is a really fine thing to do, they'll even engrave your initials or whatever you want on their razor. You could even get Family Hour engraved on your razor, and every time you shave that sweet, delicious, kissable face of yours, you can think about your favorite podcast. And when someone comes over and they see that carved into your razor, they're going to fall in love with you, and they're going to want to put their mouth on your nipples right away. Go to harrys.com/FAMILYHOUR. This is a great company. Support them. They're supporting this podcast. Hare Krishna. I want to start this podcast off by saying thank you to Adam Carolla for leading the war against patent trolls. I don't know if you guys are aware of this or not, but some time ago, a patent troll by the name of Personal Audio LLC said that they owned the patent for episodic content and therefore wanted a licensing fee from all podcasters. They directly sued Adam Carolla, and they also sued a few other podcasters, and they sent letters, really spooky letters, to some other podcasters saying that if we don't pay a licensing fee, then they were going to sue us too. Patent trolls, for those of you who somehow have missed this, is the name given to people whose business is based only on suing people. It's a really terrible, grotesque, awful thing. Quite often when they invoke these lawsuits, they're expecting the company, the small business that they're suing, to fold because they don't have the money to pay for the legal fees. These people made the dreadful and terrible mistake that so many other people have made of sticking their greed stick right into the honey hole of the hive that is the internet. And when the internet swarms, beautiful, beautiful things can happen. Adam Carolla led a crusade where he raised more than $450,000 to fight this ridiculous patent. And here is a beautiful, beautiful statement released from Personal Audio. You can read all about this at arstechnica.com. I'll post the link on the comment section of this podcast. But I'll briefly, let me just read this statement from Personal Audio, who is saying that they want to drop their case against Adam Carolla, and that he is not letting them drop the case, but is continuing the lawsuit. From Personal Audio, this is from the patent troll Personal Audio. Adam Carolla's assertions that we would destroy podcasting were ludicrous on their face, said Personal Audio CEO Brad Little, but it generated sympathy from fans and ratings for his show. Ratings. These are people who say that they invented podcasting and they don't understand that we don't get ratings. But it generated sympathy from fans and ratings for his show. Getting his fan base to continue to donate to his legal fund is a cynical exploitation of the publicity power he enjoys as an entertainer. He continued to say that Personal Audio is quite surprised Carolla turned down their offer. Perhaps this is because he feels he can simply get his fans to fund his future and now unnecessary legal expenses. Or perhaps it relates to how he uses the case as material for his show. The fact of the matter is that Adam Carolla is asking people to donate money to him for a lawsuit that he no longer needs to defend. We would like his listeners to understand this situation when deciding whether or not to donate additional money to the cause. According to Personal Audio, they've lost interest in suing podcasters because the podcasters, even one of Adam Carolla's size, just don't make enough money for it to care. They haven't stopped suing podcasters. You would think that the reason that they decided to stop suing podcasters was because they suddenly realized that they were not just fighting a few individual podcasters, but actually found themselves up against legions of us who enjoy podcasting, who enjoy listening to podcasting, who enjoy creating podcasts, and feel that anyone who would dare threaten such a beautiful medium for self-expression is the lowest form of scum that has ever existed on planet Earth. You would think that the real reason that they stopped suing these podcasts is because suddenly they realized that they weren't like some schoolyard bully who found a paraplegic with bags of money attached to his belt, but rather had stumbled upon someone who appeared to be defenseless, but in fact was the leader of an army, which Adam Carolla is, and which so many other podcasters are, and all of us band together and donated money to this, and you can see the effect has been that Personal Audio is saying that they're no longer going to sue podcasts. But here's the problem. The patent still exists, and that's why Adam Carolla is continuing to fight Personal Audio LLC, because he is trying to invalidate the patent. And also, I think he wants to teach a lesson to patent trolls out there. I'm guessing, I don't know if this is for sure, but I imagine there's some sense of wanting to show these people that you can't just file ridiculous lawsuits against small businesses who are putting out really great content into the world and not expect the force of justice in the universe to manifest around you and swarm upon you like black-eyed hell bees from some terrible nest deep, deep, deep in the third circle of hell. And I have a feeling that Personal Audio is just starting to understand what happens when you try to screw with the internet. So, guys, I'll have a link to Adam Carolla's fundraiser for this. This is not over until this patent has been invalidated. This is not over until we completely crush this ridiculous case and make it so that podcasters of the future and podcasters now will never have to worry about some company trying to shake them down for what they call a licensing fee for a patent that from a failed business that happened many, many years ago. Of course, you can read more about this it's all over everywhere. You can check it out. But I just want to say thank you so much to Adam Carolla for standing up in this way and for not being a greedy pig. Because Adam Carolla, I have a feeling, is probably doing pretty great for money. I've never done his podcast, but I've definitely been in the garage where his podcast happens, and it's filled with really, it's just nice. And I know his podcast is super popular. So if Adam Carolla wanted to be a lazy person, or if Adam Carolla wanted to be a person who wasn't thinking about other podcasters, he probably could have just paid the licensing fee that they wanted, and it wouldn't have done much to him. But instead of doing that, he organized a campaign. The campaign is clearly having an effect, and even though they want to drop the case against him, he is continuing the lawsuit, and to me, that speaks volumes for the kind of person Adam Carolla is. So thank you, Adam Carolla. And guys, definitely, I'm going to donate a little bit more to this thing, and I think you guys should too. Let's really crush this threat, because who knows? Even though they're not apparently not suing podcasters now, it doesn't mean that they can't go back and sue us at some other point in the future. Until the patent is completely invalidated, this threat could exist forever, and that's a spooky, creepy thing. All right, we've got a great episode for you today. Today's episode is with a brilliant photographer by the name of Michael Donovan, who actually took pictures of me in my first magazine photo shoot for Black and Gray Magazine, which I think is out on shelves now. It's a really cool magazine. This episode, or this issue, has pictures of Ram Dass, pictures of me and never before seen pictures of Allen Ginsberg. So I am incredibly flattered that somehow I managed to get sandwiched in with those geniuses. And Michael's a really cool, artistic, brilliant human being, and I'm very happy to be able to introduce him to you guys. And he is starting his own podcast, which he hasn't released yet, but he has been recording episodes. So once he starts doing that, I will upload those, or I will tweet those episodes so you guys can listen to him more. Okay. Also, before we get going, as always, thank you so much for using the Amazon portal located at duncantrussell.com. The next time you're going to buy something from Amazon, please, please, please go through our portal. It's a very simple thing. Just go to duncantrussell.com, click on the weird symbol, which is located in the comments section of any episode, and anything that you buy from Amazon, they give us a very small percentage. It's a cool way for you to support this podcast while buying the delicious bits of plastic that make all of us so very happy. We also have brand new t-shirts located at the shop, and also I am going on tour all over the East Coast. So if you'd like to see a live Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, or if you want to see some stand-up with me and Johnny Pemberton, you can go to duncantrussell.com, and right there on the front page are all the dates. And the tickets are moving really, really fast. So please buy tickets now. Don't put it off. Just get tickets. It helps us figure out how the tour is doing. And also it helps you from not being able to get tickets to the show, which the last time I did a tour, thank you, God. Oh, thank you. Praise Allah. Thank you. I don't deserve it. Thank you, God. Thank you. Almost every show sold out. So that stinks if you put it off to the last minute, which I always constantly do when it comes to buying tickets. So I can't say I blame you, but if you feel even mildly motivated to come out and see a live show, please go to my website and buy tickets now. Okay, Hare Krishna. Now, everybody, please open your third eyes and send great blazing balls of beautiful psychic love in the direction of photographer Michael Donovan. You can check out his stuff at studiodonovan.com. I will have links at duncantrussell.com. Please now welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, Michael Donovan. No, it does have a lock, but I never knew what it was for.
No, now you can't bump it.
What?
I'm
not going to bump. Michael!
Hello.
Welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. It's so cool to have you on the show. The way we met is really interesting. Really interesting.
Yeah.
But before we get into that, I already did an intro for you, but you are an incredible photographer and an artist, same thing. And your pictures, recently I have been trying to get a little bit into photography.
Yeah, you asked me for the $1 million camera.
Yes.
I thought you were dicking with me.
No, I thought you were dicking with me because I emailed you.
You kept asking for a more and more expensive camera.
Oh, right. No,
I'm pulling cameras out there like $35,000, $65,000, more expensive.
I was joking. Like I sent you, well, no, what I did was, here's what happened, everyone. Michael is a renowned photographer, and you'll see, I'll have links to his pictures on the website, and you will see that he's an amazing artist. And so I thought, well, I want to get into photography. And so I emailed him, can you suggest a camera? I didn't say an expensive one, and you just sent back. What was your initial response? What was that kind called?
Oh, which one? Was it the Hasselblad or...
I don't know what it was.
I don't know.
It was, but the camera was like, I think it was like a $10,000 camera or something.
A Leica.
And that was your...
I swear to God, no. You said, I want the most expensive one.
My first one was a camera, and your first response was, oh, try a Leica. And I'm like, oh, cool, a Leica. That sounds like something I could buy at a drugstore or something. So I look it up. It's a $10,000 camera.
For a point and shoot.
Yeah, for a point and shoot.
But for you, that anyway, before we get into that, the point is, not you can't just be a photographer. Like, it, photography is really interesting to me because it reminds me of the it seems so simple. It's like
I believe a quote from you and Johnny Pemberton was that photographers are, what is it, history's lost artist.
Wow. Yeah. Because people see that,
but it wasn't. It was from the piece that you did. It was. Let me just get you some water. Let me get you some Coca-Cola.
Oh yeah.
Like that dick.
Well, you know what, man? I, to all photographers out there, I apologize because ever since I've gotten. My brother sent me a Canon EOS Rebel or some kind
of
like.
That's good.
Yeah. And I put a lens on it, and I went riding around on my bike trying to take pictures of ducks, and got home and put the pictures in, being like, these are going to look great. I'm sure they're just going to be incredible. And it's like the worst pictures you've ever seen. They're boring. They're just stupid.
They're ducks. Yeah, go ahead.
They suck. So what I mean is photography is a really cool thing because it looks so easy. When you see a photographer, you're just seeing a guy with a device that he's pointing in the direction of something interesting.
Collecting.
And he's collecting, and yeah. You look at that, and you're like, whatever, anyone can do that. But when you try it yourself, it's not like that. So can you explain to me what is the process that you use when you take pictures?
But I think that's, okay, so backing up, I do think that anybody could do it, but they have to know, they have to stake a claim in what they're doing. So you can take shitty photos of ducks and say, oh, I'm a really good photographer, but I take photos. I do ducks, but I make them look shitty, so I look like an amateur does them.
Ah,
you know, and then if you get a handful of people like, oh, that's good. Right. I like them. I totally feel that.
Right.
But obviously, as you get better and better, you know, the photos aren't shaky or whatever the hell your problem is.
How much of photography is a technical understanding of the camera, and how much of it is?
There's so many professional photographers that really don't use cameras. I still, when I do jobs, I'll ask assistants to order the equipment because I don't always. There's a piece of equipment called a butt plug, and I don't know what it is, but
what?
It makes me giggle when it's on the sheet. But I know
what it is.
I know what a butt plug is, but I know what, and then I know what a butt plug is, but still I don't know because I like I do, but I don't because I don't pay attention to the technical side.
Yeah.
I do know my technical side, but I keep it very minimum because my style isn't that style. So it's everybody has their own style.
What the fuck is a camera butt plug?
It's for the gear. It's for the equipment. So it's Yeah, I'm not going to be able to describe it. See, I can't even describe it. Ask me to describe what it looks like. You know.
No, I just read that there's, it's just interesting that you say that because I did just read this thing about how there's a piece of equipment called a gag or something, but it's like a camera inside a vibrator where you could take pictures inside.
This is what butt plugs look like.
Yeah, that's the butt plug I'm familiar with. I'm very familiar with that style, but I've never heard of a. Anyway, so there's so much strange equipment that goes on with this, and it's such a weird art form in that sense because it's so very, very technical.
Yeah.
And whenever things become really, really technical, for me, it just feels like it's so easy to lose whatever that initial inspiration is that makes you want to start doing something. You know, it can get lost in the gears and the wheels.
Well, I think that's the thing is because the camera, it's a handful of gears, so it can go spin forward and backwards and sideways and left and smaller and bigger. There's a lot of that going on, but I think that people get caught up in that. So you start off with this is my idea is that most people when they pick up a camera they start shooting, it's shit shooting is what I call it, and it's shooting shit like rocks.
Yes,
and
signs,
and get a flower.
Yes,
and then after you get your flower, then you start moving to ducks or you know things. You kind of take a step up. You get some geese. Good landscape. Yeah, and then you eventually ask your friend, "Can I take a photo of you?" You know,
right.
You get to a human being, which is a total. That's when you realize that it's not technical at all. that it comes down to how you're relating to people. And you're relating to what they're, you know, you have to have an emotional connection to the viewer. So they're your audience. And if you have to play a game on how can I get this person to do whatever the hell they're doing, and then for me to capture that in a way that the audience will relate to.
Wow.
Because I feel that what happens is that people get really caught up in the gear, and they can make this really great image, but it's boring as fuck.
Yes.
Because we've seen it a million times before, so that already makes it, we're jaded.
Yes.
And then, like, we've already seen duck photos, you know? Yeah. So, and then you have an idea of how good a duck photo needs to be. But if you're thinking of it in terms of entertaining your audience, and you have that duck, you can, let me just make it even blurrier and call it duck soup.
Yeah.
And then it's like the name is part of the photo, or the, right. You know, it changes the story of the image.
Yeah. I get it. And what you're talking about reminds me of, you've obviously heard of the observer effect in physics, which is that, you know, that your perception of the way a thing works on the quantum level seems to have some effect over the way the thing works. This is a problem where the expectation and the quantum level, this is something New Age people love to talk about, is the very expectation of the observer seems to affect things on the quantum level.
Yeah.
So in that same way, when you're taking pictures, it's not just that you're taking pictures of the external world, you're taking pictures of the way the external world is reacting to you. The photographer, you're taking a picture of a reaction that's based on you being in the environment. So you're, even though you might be taking a picture of a duck, a flower, or a person, you're really taking a picture of a reflection of yourself.
Well, and that's the saying that photographers will say is that you never take a picture of the person, you're really taking a picture of yourself.
They say that?
It's a photographer thing.
Ah, see, I always looked at it as,
I always looked at it as photography is, you know, photo is light, and then isn't that Latin for study of? So it's a study of light. And so, and I'm probably fucking this up.
Yeah.
So someone who's smarter than me is going to tell me that I'm an idiot. But
no.
This is how I see it. So you're a studier of light. And then what is light? Well, light is like God. Like God is energy. So you're a studier of God energy.
Whoa.
You know. So when you take a photo, are you really you're taking an image that will be placed onto Instagram or onto Facebook or wherever, or on your website or in print. But really, you are studying something. The more that I think that good artists, they'll study the world, and it just happens you just capturing it or collecting it, and it's just like putting rocks in a bag that you from a trip to the beach.
Whoa.
You know, and you just look at this and look at this red round rock, this reminds me of, but the red round rock, you can understand it if I show it to somebody who wasn't there at the beach with me,
right? And do you find that when you're collecting these rocks or images, do you find that your mood has an impact on the images? If you go into a shoot with and you're in a certain mood, do you think it changes the result?
I think that it, yes, but it's part of the thing where this is what I found, is that the mood isn't the mood of the day. So the mood is, I think we have wider moods. It's like climate change, and people will look at the weather. So today the weather is angry and sad. The next day it's happy and fun, and the next day is. But what I found is that I'll go through and I'll purposely make a new body of work. So I'll spend a few months looking for a new way to look at the world, and when I look at the world through that lens, I'll make it. I'll come up with words like I'll make it. It's the expensive world.
Oh yeah.
And so cool. Expensive, cool, and dark. And so for a month, I can look through, change the filter in my eyes.
Yeah.
You know, in my mind, and just pull it out and say, well, do I want to look at the world as happy and whatever, or right now, or recently, I went through one that was very moody, dark, and macabre.
Yeah.
And so I built this whole body of work for within 2-3 weeks, where it just, and then I could see it and I could turn it on, and then of course I'm, you know, hanging out and doing other things, and then I lose that macabre, dark, moody. But I think that if I'm able to do this to myself, I know other people can do it too.
Yes.
You know, we can, and if we can do it, we're probably already doing it.
Right.
Or it's happening to us.
Right.
And we're not aware that it is happening to us on, you know, if I'm able to do this, if I'm able to create an image and I know that I can make a dark, moody feel, that will make you feel dark and moody when you look at it. If I get a girl smiling happy in a photo and she's saying in her mind, I love you, when you look at the image, you're going to see someone saying, I love you,
right,
and you're going to feel loved.
Yes.
So you have to think, too, what is the media, you know, especially within my world, what's the media, what are the messages being sent?
Right.
And a lot of it's like, it's happy, it's good, everything's okay, bye, 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 you know, and not ever slow down and look around. And it's okay that you have a bad day. And, it's okay to buy. It's okay to do this shit.
Yeah.
But I do think that if we look at our minds in terms of climate that way, yeah. I don't know. I'm playing with that.
Really
a little
cool,
bit.
Man. It's kind of like, to go back to the idea of God being light, or light being the like the purest form of matter, and it's sort of, you have this insane device that's capturing these packets of information, or converting them into ones and zeros. Really,
yeah.
Converting these things. The question is, how much information is being stored inside the device that we don't even understand yet? Like, when you're taking a picture, you're capturing the photons bouncing off of whatever it is that you're pointing the camera in the direction of. But what else is inside those photons? Is it possible that the actual emotional resonance of the subject mixed in with...
I think they do.
So you think that somehow these devices are transforming these packets of information that contain within them not just the physical form of what the...
As weird as that sounds, I think that
it's picking up their emotional resonance.
I think that there's a level of it. I think it weakens. It's like taking a copy of a copy, but I think that you can... Whoa. If it's... because you have to. We took photos last night. You know, we took Polaroids.
Yes.
And when you look at them, you get this happiness from it.
Yes.
And then some people will just see it as, oh, those were happy people. And then other people will look at it and get that energy. And
yes.
Then other people will be angry because it's the idea that what's the ugliest sound in the world? It's other people having fun. Or whatever, you know, when you're not. So it's, you looking at that might make that person angry, but
yes.
There's still, I don't think that it's this heavy, strong emotion that, you know, this or energy, but I think that there's a little weak signal in there that could possibly, because, you know, we don't know. So why not? Why not just assume that it does? I think it's a good idea to think that way.
This is in sigil magic when they talk about the potency of symbols or the potency of, you know, if you look at like, religious symbols, or you look at occult symbols, the pentagram, for example, you look at that thing and it gives you a feeling. When you see the image of a pentagram, you will have an immediate feeling from looking at the thing. Now, a chaos magician described this to me. He said, if you want to understand how powerful symbols are, put a gun on a table when someone comes over and see what the mood's like in the house, and you'll quickly...
Happy time.
This is going to be a great party.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I came to the house where the guy has a gun on the table. So the mood instantly shifts.
Yeah.
So that's a symbol. The gun is a symbol. The gun activates the part of your brain that has attributed all this stuff to a gun.
Yeah.
The gun isn't radiating some kind of like dark potency necessarily, or is it? You look at a pentagram in the same way, you're gonna like have a feeling when you look at that.
Yeah.
Now, how much of that feeling is based on what as you're saying, the filters that are already in your brain, and how much of that is actually radiating out of the symbol? It's just a curious thing, because when you take a picture of a person and the person's smiling, and you've captured you're seeing a copy of these photons that were bouncing off of this image, turned into ones and zeros. You're also, it's rolling through all the filters in your brain. That what I'm trying to get at is, whatever that packet of information that's in there, what is the packet of information that's separate from your own internal filter? That's the question. Is there some original new thing added to your brain, like throwing a pebble in a pond, or does it all just get lost in your filtration mechanism and then there's nothing happening at all? I hope it's the former, not the latter, because the latter means we're all just our brains, and that sucks.
Yeah, I don't. I think it's. I'm trying to reassemble my idea of time, and so I think that if you took right now. So assuming that time, where we have this history with these memes, you know. So you have your pentagram meme that's been traveling through time.
Yes,
and then it hits today, but I think that it can change, and it's the idea of one of the ideas I have with laughter is it's taking two ideas, and maybe this has been said by someone before, but it's taking two ideas and you collide them together, and that causes the you know, the person to they get that laughter because it's this sonic boom inside their body, of their mind and their spirit and their soul. Oh shit, this is a new way of looking at this thing. And so I think that it will travel with stuff, but that also can adjust over time. It's the, you know, the color, the story of the color pink with men in blue?
Nope.
So blue used to be feminine and pink was masculine.
Okay.
And it was advertisers in the 50s or 60s that had changed the game and switched it. So it was masculine to wear blue and feminine to wear pink. So there would have been this meme going along. So if you met a man and he's wearing pink, like, oh, that's a man.
Tough guy.
Yeah, he's going to kick your ass wearing pink. But then it shifted because somebody said, I don't want this to be like this anymore. I want this to be different. Somebody had an idea. So somebody had a sonic boom within themselves that said, this is going the wrong way, or they were evil and said, I'm going to make it my way. Whatever the hell it was. And it's like the idea of jaywalking. You know, jaywalking, the way that they, you know about this, how that started with... It was an advertising agency for the auto manufacturers, I believe, and it was because cars were new and they're ripping through the streets, just killing people, running over people.
Oh my god! So I bet.
And people didn't like the cars, so the advertising agencies created radio jingles like "Watch out for that jaywalker! See, he's a bad person." And a jaywalker was a bad man because he was lazy and he crossed in the middle of the street and didn't wait for that
important car.
Yeah, getting its way around.
Yeah.
So I think that they hold, so something will be something, but then it'll change.
Right.
So you can, so I do think that we are, I don't know if we're changing or if it's changing us or if it's just the world, but I do think that, you know, if you wanted to take any symbol, we could change it today. We could turn something negative and turn it into a positive, or take a positive, take it to a negative, or take something that's dull and make it something, mean something.
Right.
So I don't know. I don't know who's responsible for it. That's a question I would have, is who's responsible for changing these things?
All right.
You know,
is
it just
up here? Let's answer the question. Who is responsible for that?
Oh, man. Donald Trump. I think he makes a lot of decisions.
He's got a tower, just like every wizard has a tower.
Have you heard about his son-in-law over here in the East Village?
No.
He's bred this dickhead is just going through and buying buildings and then just kicking out all the rent controlled people or making it uncomfortable. But it's great that he's bred more dickheads.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that is interesting. That idea. That is that's where you can you get into the wonderful place of trying to decondition yourself, because you start to consider, what are the ideas in my mind that have been implanted there by people like Donald Trump, and what are the ideas that are in my mind that are just original ideas?
Yeah.
How much of my mind consists of symbols or rather not symbols, because a symbol just exists. Like, for example, the pentagram, I was walking on the beach in Georgia and I found a starfish.
Okay.
A sand dollar. And on the sand dollar, there's a pentagram. A pure Slayer pentagram. Heavy metal.
With a 666 on his belly.
No 666. Just this pentagram on this fucking sand dollar. And I'm like, well, this sand dollar is evil, right? That's what the conditioning will tell you. But really, what you're just seeing is like a recurring geometric form that has been existing since the beginning of time. And then the hairless monkeys saw this recurring
and turned
form.
It into something.
Well, and it probably initially they looked at it and they were like, wow, mathematically, this is a really interesting shape. And also, a human has five appendages sticking out from the torso, and this must represent human beings. And then, wow, this is like the mathematical pattern of a perfect human form, or the human form is some kind of pentagram that's emerging out of the universe that can walk around, all that stuff. But then somebody was like, shut the fuck up, you're freaking me out, that's just an evil thing to think, we're not pentagrams. And then it ended up where heavy metal bands.
So you think it came out of fear?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, clearly the shape has no, there's no evil potency about the pentagram. But if, you know, youth pastors across America every single day are railing against a geometric form, like, this is what the evil Satanists use, a pentagram. Those Satanists got that pentagram on the sand dollar. Do you know what I mean? So the question is, how many of those instantaneous reactions that you have to the world have been placed there by corporatists, industrialists, and people trying to actually shape your brain
in
a way to make you the perfect.
All over us. They're all over us.
Like, all over us.
Complete. Our beards are a part of it for me. So there was a, was it, I think it was Lever and I can't remember who the other one was. They came out with this, they didn't call it the war on men, but it was the idea of having war on men. And so this, I was shaving my head. This is 4 years ago. Yes. So I was shaving my head and shaving my beard. And then I heard about this war on men and what it was because they weren't making profits from men. So if you're going to make more profits from men, what do you do? Well, they got to shave off that hair.
Right.
They got to get that going. So that's when I stopped shaving my beard. Is, you know, I'll trim it, but
yes,
because I don't want to be too crazy. But part of that came from knowing that they just want to sell me razors. I don't need to shave my face.
Right.
I have no reason. So it's like we literally are wearing results of it, because even my decision to have a beard came from somebody personally, not personally, but impersonally attacking my gender.
Right.
And then what is gender?
Right.
You know, and you can go deeper and deeper and deeper into all this stuff on what we are and who we are. But I think that a lot of the shit that we do, I think that if I always like the idea of stripping it all back, throwing us into caveman days, narrowing it down to 50 people.
Yes.
So if we all went back 50 people or down to 50 people, I would be the guy that we'd all have a responsibility, and we would just go out there and we'd run around and we would collect food and kill animals. When we all get back, you're the guy that's going to tell the jokes and tell the stories of the day and get them kind of thinking.
Yes.
I'm the guy that's going to put his hand on the wall and spit on it. And
yeah.
I made art, guys.
Yeah.
And that's it. And we have a handful of others of what we're doing. But then somewhere it just got so crazy where someone said they started twisting it on us. And so that we feel obligated to make all of the decisions to wear shoes versus not wearing shoes. You don't have to walk around the city wearing shoes.
Right.
You don't have to drive. You don't have to. You get in your car. Do you really need to wear shoes? But you feel this need to wear shoes.
That's fascinating.
And you don't think about wearing.
Driving without shoes on feels like you're. Is that against the law?
I don't know. I do it though. When I'm in a car, I'll kick off my shoes.
It's
if I'm
great,
on a long trip.
But yeah, when you do it, you feel like, what the fuck?
No, this is my toes are. I don't know if I'll be able to stop right.
Well. Yeah. Is this going to fuck up the functioning of my car?
And if I get into an accident, are they going to say, oh, this is caused by no shoes?
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, that will be Nancy Grace will be talking
about
the barefoot car killer. So there's this great idea in the world, and it's in every religion. And the idea is that certain pieces of the universe are alive, disembodied pieces of the universe are alive. They're malicious, malevolent.
Okay.
They climb into us. They control us. And they call these things demons, right?
Okay.
So whenever people think about this, they think about the movie version of the demons, the exorcist, the kid spinning his head around, stuff
that
like
guy.
That. But if you really think about it, you know, I love the one of my favorite stories in the New Testament is the story of Jesus pulling the demons out of a man and putting them into a pig. Have you ever heard this story?
No.
It's really cool. So, I mean, God damn, the New Testament is so psychedelic and so creepy, but Jesus is like, I think it's an island that he's on. I'm not sure if it's not. Jesus is on an island. The people there are upset because there's a demon-possessed man who's been harassing them and apparently has all this great strength and he's dangerous and deadly. So Jesus comes to him, and like the demons say to Jesus something weird like, "You're not supposed to be here yet." And he's like, it's really esoteric thing like that.
His ship arrived like an hour early. They're just upset where his flight came in.
I'm still like, eating my salad.
I didn't brush my teeth yet.
Yeah. I was pooping.
I really needed to take a shit before you came in here.
and then the demon said something like, the man said something about the demons inside of him.
Wait, the demon said that the man said something?
No, the demon that was in the man said, "We are legion." And it means that he was not just possessed by one demon, he was possessed by just a swarm of demons. So Jesus took these demons and he cast them out of the man and into some pigs.
Okay.
And the pigs went running off a cliff and all died. And I think the villagers were like, "Hey, fuck you, hippie. You just killed all our pigs with the demons that you got out of this dude." And they were pissed at him. But when I think about demons, modern demons, I think how much of a difference is it when you have a consumer completely brainwashed by the popular conditioning, the corporate conditioning, and you know when you listen to somebody and you hear them say something like, "You know, the United States, we're not perfect, but we're the best country in the world." But you hear that coming out of more than one mouth. Like, so many people will say that until you realize, like, oh, you've been encoded with that. You got the cult.
You got the cult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got the cult. Someone put that in you.
So, you clearly said the Pledge of Allegiance as a child.
Sure.
Over and over every morning.
Yeah.
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 So, you ever wonder what happened to those kids? Did you ever have a kid in the class that would not say Pledge of Allegiance?
No, I was never had that.
We had a kid that didn't do it. I bet you he's fucking cool now.
He's probably in Guantanamo Bay getting fucking force-fed. But that's a demon. If that's not a demon, I don't know.
The Pledge of Allegiance is.
No, not the input when you say something that isn't an original thought that's been implanted into your brain by a powerful, I would call it a wizard or a necromancer or a magician who works for a massive corporation whose job is to implant demons into people that make them pay for things or buy things or say things that promote this product. I was a little drunk last night. Were you talking about the cult of branding?
Culting of brands, yeah.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
So basically it's you take a brand and there's a cult around it. So you think of the Apple. Apple's the easy one because there's fanboys. I don't even know where to start with this. All brands, all successful brands, and when I say successful, it means that they are making, my version of it would be that they're making enough revenue to continue moving on as a collective.
Right.
You know, so their product may change or whatever. They may be good-hearted people, like Tom's is a good example of a brand that they treat their employees, supposedly they treat their employees well.
Yes.
And they do good, and they're making basic products, shoes and toothpaste.
Right.
And then there's others that are more nefarious. But with each of the brands, you have, if you want to make a good brand, you'll turn it into a cult. So you'll have it so that there's just the same way as a normal cult. You get a specific language, you get people to follow it, you get people to talk about it, you get people, it's just where am I going with this? It's you have, because now I have Apple stuck in my head. I want to move away from Apple because I think it's like an easy target. But
I think it's a great, it's a well known great, you know, a great
take
way
to BMW.
Okay,
because BMW is different. It's a little bit more separate from them. But you get people that will think negatively about BMW, and people think very positive, and they'll wear a BMW logo.
Yes.
They'll meet up other people that have BMWs.
Yes.
And so they've succeeded. BMW succeeded at creating a cult, and they have but cult is just a culture. So there's nothing wrong with culture. It's just that there's different cultures. And so your culture, if you're a Lamborghini or if you're a Prius, your Prius people, your culture of Prius doesn't really get along with that side that does like the Humvee culture.
Sure.
So I think that part of it is accept that these are different cultures. I think the way to, because there's so much hatred between cults.
Well, yeah, sure. Yeah, you're talking about these like little mini paradigms that have been implanted in people's brains by these. Here's the reason I think that even though you're trying to paint the picture as one where it's not so sinister,
yeah.
I think that it is a little sinister. And the reason it's sinister is that when you're with Apple, when you're working at Apple, mm-hmm. and you're in the marketing department of Apple, and you're coming up with phrases, or you're looking at the entire scope of the way people think about Apple.
Yeah.
So when you're sitting there talking, you're not just looking at like, what's great about Apple? You're looking at like, what's the controversy about Apple? Mm. What's the most controversial thing that people say about Apple? So that you understand the entire scope, because you recognize that, you know, whenever some controversy springs up, you recognize that just always makes more money for the company. You know that the controversy tends to work out for the better because it promotes you, publicizes you, gets you out there. The long and short of it is, what you're doing on a daily basis as a marketer working for any cult,
yeah,
is that you are working on new spells. And these spells are called the ad campaigns.
Yeah.
And the ad campaigns are these assemblages of images, video, and most importantly, slogans that are designed to swim through people's ears, get into their brains.
Just do it.
And, yeah, just do it. And they grow there, just yeah. like demons. And then if you've really pulled it off, if you've really, really pulled it off,
yeah.
then what you do, then the demon that lives in the person's mind is this packet of information that consists of an image and a slogan and an idea.
An icon. It's a logo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That person will infect a person near them with yeah. the demon. And they will begin saying things that they think are their own original thoughts, but that the demon is actually working through them, so that they start talking about things that are related to the brand. For example, they might start saying something like, "You know what, man? I just don't get PCs. It's like they break down all the time.
Yeah.
They're really hard to use. They get viruses. I mean, I just don't want to deal with that shit. I want to be able to plug something in and it works."
Yeah.
And you think you're saying that because you've thought of that, but there's a small chance that somebody in some...
You've read it somewhere.
Yes!
You've absolutely read it somewhere, and it's yeah. very hard to shut it off.
Yeah.
You know, from my world of doing photography and making art, I try to not look at stuff, but then I have to look at stuff because yeah. it's just part of the world that we live in, and then I enjoy it too. So, and it does infect you, and then you have the infection, and then there's a part where, you know, do we have a Jesus to come around and pull the legion out of us and yes. throw it in some pigs?
Yeah.
Do we have that? I don't think that we necessarily have that. I think that
yeah, we do.
Do we?
LSD, friend.
Oh, that's true. Get some ayahuasca
yeah.
down the hatch.
Yeah.
Get some, yeah, you're right.
That will get the demons out of you for a second, but they'll come right back. And, you know, going yeah. to a nice retreat, going to a Ram Dass retreat, meditating, this kind of stuff for a second. When I was on this island off the coast of Georgia, I remember watching a deer running through the forest, and there was a swarm of gnats. Fought like a cloud of gnats
poor
around
guy.
This poor deer, and he's galloping to try to get away from the gnats, but every time he stopped, whoosh, they're just surrounding him again. So a psychedelic will lift this cloud of symbolic
yeah.
demons that are have used our minds as hives away for a second, and during that second you see yourself as what you really are. You see things for what they really
yeah.
are, and you're like, oh fuck, I am so conditioned and brainwashed that I don't even know what I am. And then before you know it, they're back on you. But you always remember that time where you realize...
You have that place to escape.
Yes.
You can always bring it back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And people call the unconditioned state... People will call that unconditioned state crazy. The word that people have for the unconditioned, unbrainwashed state is...
So that right there... So this is a game that we could play where crazy... doing acid in an unconditioned state, or just unconditioned state through meditation, acid, whatever the hell you want to do, that is considered crazy. So let's play marketer for a second.
Okay.
Play a game. If you want to play this game with
me. Let's do it.
Let's flip that. So let's create a meme that takes the unconditioned state and makes it something beautiful and love.
No, let's do another. That's fun. I like that makes it something beautiful and love. I was going to say, let's do it so that it sells Coke. like if Coca-Cola was like, how do we make these acid heads drink more Coke? Like, like, hey, when you're in an unconditioned state, free from the corporate symbols that we've infested your mind with, what's better than a nice cold
Coca-Cola? That's what I needed. Oh, brings you right back down from the unconditioned state. Get down from there, son.
Yeah. Whenever I want to come down from my unconditioned state that's making me annoy people at dinner parties while I talk about corporate conditioning, I drink a nice Coca-Cola.
I sit down in front of my Apple, get on my Harley, right out into the sunset wearing my Doc Martens.
I know what you mean, though, man. It's really cool to, like, the idea is, like, you get this, it's like in the same way that, like, the... On, you can download how to build an atomic bomb from the internet.
And don't say that in front of my computer.
Yeah, like, can you imagine you and I trying to assemble an atomic bomb?
Oh, my God. Our hair would
fall out.
And
we no, shit, our eyeballs would fall out within the first day. We have no idea how to deal with that shit. But you can take, that's the funny thing, is that you can take the exact same tactics these dark corporate wizards are using and turn it against them in a way to do what you were saying, which is like...
Because, well, the thing is, too, is when you meet the people that are in those organizations, they're not bad people.
Right.
They are just trying to do a job. And they're... A lot of times, you when you break it down, they're fucking cool people.
Yes.
They're just... They gotta pay rent. And when rent just keeps ratcheting it up higher and higher, right, and higher, it's this thing where sometimes I think that... You know, I want to blame corporations, but then sometimes... You step back and like, well, it's not really the people. And then it's the hive mentality. Maybe that's what it is. But then you have to look at the effects that are happening to the hive. So, you know, what I'm looking at in New York is real estate. Same thing's happening in San Francisco. It's fucking expensive to live out here. A tiny ass, a two-bedroom apartment in East Village, $4,500.
Yes.
You know, and fortunately I got mine for not that. But can you imagine... If you moved out here because you just wanted to be an artist,
yes,
and you had to come up with $4,500 a month and you're a new artist,
yeah,
and then you got offered by this company to come up with shit that people will find catchy and will get stuck in their brain.
Yes.
And like, oh, fuck, I don't, but I just want to live here and I want to make art. What do I do? What do I do? And some people are fortunate enough that they have enough integrity that they can fight through that and they're willing to be broke and poor and live in a smaller place and slowly work themselves up through integrity. But other people, they're not bad, but I think that things like that can affect it that we're not looking at. So we'll blame a corporation, but we also have to look at, This is a being that's trying to survive, and the parts of it want to live, and they have to survive, but they're dealing with the environment, and the environment is crushing them.
Well, yeah, I think that's I think another version of that is like, you find yourself suddenly in the United States military, let's say, for example, or you find yourself as an Israeli soldier.
Okay.
You know, and you look at what you look at the end effect of, like, you know, being a soldier in Israel right now, is that a bunch of kids are dying. So the organism that you're a piece of, if you're in the military, if you're a soldier, then you're a tiny little cell in the body of a dragon.
Yeah.
And when you recognize
it, I like the idea of the dragon.
It's a dragon.
I love the visual of that, though. Yeah, it is a dragon.
If you look
and...
at the combined... The gestalt of the Israeli military.
Yeah.
What you have there is a dragon. Sure as shit. If you look at what's happening, it's blowing fire on buildings. It's dropping bombs on buildings. The dragon consists of every single person is a pixel in this dragon that forms whenever there's conflict or when it feels threatened.
Yeah.
It turns into a dragon like Voltron. It assembles all these little pieces and flies over cities. And ends up indiscriminately killing kids.
Yeah.
So you're one little, it's called diffusion of responsibility, because you're not the dragon itself, and you're one little cell in the dragon.
Just doing my job, baby.
Yeah, I'm just processing.
I don't, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing that's always scary to me, too, is that if the dragon flipped and started breathing fire on its tail.
Yes.
You know, and it's if just bad shit went down, and would military soldiers have the – would they ever – okay, the FEMA death camps. Let's play with this.
Okay.
So imagine that you're some 18-year-old kid from South Carolina and, you know, you have a conscience. You've been listening to Duncan. You've been listening to, you know, for years. You're doing the right thing, but you're joining the military because it's an option.
Yes.
It's the most feasible option that you have. So you go in there and fast forward 2 years, and the entire time you're doing, just doing good for you. You're meditating. You're doing your thing.
Yes.
But now your boss says, we actually are going to do a war on your own country, on our own people.
Yeah.
Because we just can't, we can't feed the people. We can't water the people. Whatever the hell they can't do. So will that kid, how would that kid get out? How would that kid be able to, and also infect that group to say, we're not doing this? Because I think once they realize that they can't do it to their mother, like, we need you to go back home and we need you to slaughter your entire family.
Yeah.
That kid knows that that's not right, but he's hearing it from above, I have to do it.
Yeah.
And so he has to make a decision. But if they can start, if people can start seeing that they're a part of this dragon that's just firing dragon at, or firing fire at their brother or sister across the enemy
which
line.
They are.
Exactly. It, what would be need to be implanted? What meme or what icon or logo? What would we, what slogan would we need to install to get them to stop fighting?
I think it's the meme that Neem Karoli Baba said, which is love everyone, serve everyone, remember God. So the idea is, if you just follow that, and if you don't believe in God, you could say, remember the, you know, if you have to, eventually, you're going to have to renounce your nationalism, no matter where you live.
And I think that's going to happen so much easier for people. I think that we're going to see in the next 5-10 years. Borders disappearing.
Renounce your national identity.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. Renounce your national identity. Sacrifice your culture. Abandon whatever conditioning mechanisms have created a sense of separation between you and some other group. Embrace the idea that you're an earthling, not an American, Israeli, Palestinian,
exactly.
Whatever. We're living on Earth together, and it's a beautiful, beautiful planet, and it's so wonderful to be here that we don't need to be killing each other anymore. So what? Once people start realizing that, which is the truth, that's the truth outside conditioning. Once you start realizing, like, oh, fuck, man, I got tricked by a bunch of old, violent, brainwashed, vampiric demons. They implanted a bunch of ideas into my head that are completely wrong. Clearly, I'm just an earthling. Clearly, there's no Canada or United States or Mexico. There's just this one beautiful swath of land with a bunch of people living on it. And so I'm an earthling. So then the next time your commander comes to you and says, hey, man, I need you to, like, firebomb this orphanage or whatever it is that they're asking you to do, you say no, and you get arrested or you get shot. You give up your life for the planet. That's the idea, is that if it's like, another way to put it is, at some point with Israel and Palestine, somebody has to have this realization, which is, I would rather my children get murdered than be a child murderer.
Mm.
That's the thing, because the idea is that if you think that they justify their violence by saying they want to kill our kids. So they say the way we're going to stop people from killing kids is by killing kids. So it's a bad form. It's bad logic.
And the, you know, the thing is that the logic, if you follow, is like, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah, yeah, just kill them. They won't kill our kid.
Yeah.
It makes sense, but it's global. It's globalized child abuse that happened generations and generations and generations ago.
Wow.
So you have somebody's great 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 grandfather who got into a fight. You were telling me yesterday about the two guys that speak only one language.
Yes.
They're the last two on the planet, and then they don't want to talk to each other.
Yeah.
So they're thousands of years, two dickheads that got into a fight like that, and it just spread, and it just got wider and wider and wider.
That's it.
That's it. So I think if we just look at, like, I've been abused and you've been abused. Everybody's been abused. We all react to our abuses, and we don't realize that we do these things.
Yes.
They're all in us, and it's like, and you do these things. Sometimes you just like, oh, I really shouldn't be doing this, but it's just this like, I have to do this thing, and you're feeling guilty while you're doing it or whatever, and the shame or whatever. But it's you know, noticing it, being aware. Once you have that awareness, step back, and you know, then I think that if we just agree with everybody that, look, I know that you've had some shit, that your mom had shit, your father had shit, and your great grandparents had shit, let's just try just today just to walk away from each other and get along.
Yes.
You know, let's not, we don't need to sleep in the same bed together tonight. I'm just going to go for a walk.
We need some space.
We need some space. We all need to go on a global walk.
Well, you know, like, here's one, like, okay. If I say to somebody who's been really conditioned in whatever country they live in,
yeah,
and I come to them and I say, would you be willing to die for your country? And they will say, yes, I would. I would die for my country. But if I go up to them
then
and I
shoot
say,
them right there.
Yeah, right. Oh, well, here you go. That's not the solution. Oh. But if I go to someone and I say, would you be willing to die for your planet? They'll be like, hell no. What am I, some kind of commie? I would die for my country, but not my planet. But it's people have to move from their heads from the idea, which is quite accepted and considered a heroic trait to want to die for your country.
Yeah.
If it's heroic to die for your country, isn't it 15 million times more heroic to die for your planet? And if it is more heroic to die for your planet and you really feel like that and you're a soldier in whatever military you happen to be in, then what you would do is the idea, and this would horrify Sharon, and this would horrify Hamas leaders and whoever is trying to engineer these terrible wars. If the people realizing that they would die for their planet poured out into the streets and laid down, just like what Martin Luther King suggested, lay down. If Palestinians came out and instead of hiding and cowering, and not cowering, I'm sorry that I said that, but I would be cowering if I was. I would be cowering. Yeah. I didn't mean that as though they're cowards. I meant instead of being in these
just
buildings.
Being a human being, I would fucking cower.
If they went out into the streets
yes.
and laid down. And
said,
if
here
the
I am.
Israelis went out in the streets and laid down. All the people.
Yeah,
just went out and laid down. The soldiers put their guns down. The people dropped their bombs. Knowing I'm going to die today, but when I die today, I'm dying for my planet, and I'm dying for a world where these old demonic vampires no longer control us. You would see the fucking color drop out of the faces of these warmongers, because what do you do now?
Yeah.
Now you have to make, now, and there's video of bombs being dropped on just groups of nonviolent protesters.
Oh, they're doing that?
No, if they did.
Oh, if they did, okay.
If one bomb drops on a group of nonviolent protesters and that gets filmed.
And distributed.
And seen.
Which it would.
Then whoever dropped that bomb immediately loses the war.
Yeah.
They've lost the war. There's no coming back from that. When you drop a bomb on a UN orphanage, which they just did, or a UN shelter and kill.
So it's the opposite of a suicide bomber. It's a suicide receiver.
It's a suicide protester.
Which is a, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's the old monks that would light themselves on fire. But
that's it.
I think that, yeah, because it's the, if you know, would you die for your planet, or even more, it's like, would you die for yourself?
Yeah.
You know, and that, you know, that's what acid does. You die. I have this idea that every time you go to bed at night, you die and you wake up and you're in this
Whoa.
New incarnation.
That's
so you just
cool.
kind of pop in and pop out. I remember as a kid, I'd watch my dad, like, is he going to be the same person when he wakes up? But then, you know, if you think about it, when he went to bed, he's kind of like this, like, oh, I'm tired and a little cranky and stuff. And he'd like fall asleep on the couch watching TV, and then he'd wake up and he's groggy, total different type of character. But he's still part of this incarnation. But when we do, we die. I think we die at night. And we are reborn. And when you do acid, you die. There's a big part of you that has to die.
Yes.
And if you're already going to be dying, or parts of you, traits of you, demons are dying. Yeah, I think that asking these guys or these kids or whoever the hell, just go die for yourself.
Yeah,
that's a bold question to ask somebody. Would you die for yourself, or would you die for your planet? But
would you die to save some kids?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you hear like whenever there's like when somebody gets a Purple Heart or what? No, it's the what's the big highest honor you can get in the military? It's called the National Medal of
National Medal of Honor.
Yeah, it's for people who have thrown themselves on a grenade usually, or have like done some incredible thing where they have given up their own lives to help the people around them. Right.
Yeah.
And they get the highest honor. Right. But they only get that if they do it for their military. You wouldn't get that if you did it for another. In other words, if you were on the quote enemy and a grenade was thrown at the enemy and you threw yourself on the grenade, then you would be
that's okay. So these the kids in the military that are defectors because they're so like they can't handle it anymore, that's a good way to defect. If you're going to defect, don't defect by walking off and then having people search for you and causing a whole shitstorm back home. Instead, go get yourself killed and protect human beings.
Where you're just like, yeah, I'm just going to start protecting people now. I'm not going to protect the right color people or the people who speak the right language or the people who worship the right religion. I'm going to do what I can to protect all people. And in comic books, you know, every single superhero, if there was a superhero that was like, no, I'm not going to protect this swath of people because they're Islamic, or I'm not going to protect this. The heroes are the ones who give up their lives to protect innocent people. So basically, and by the way, this isn't my idea. This is like when you watch any Martin Luther King speech or any nonviolent protest, or look at what Gandhi did and look at the effect that nonviolent resistance has in the face of oppression. You see that it just works.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Israel's already experiencing it, and there isn't – but the problem is whenever they find missiles underneath the schools that Israel's blown up, it justifies for some group of people. It's like, see, you had to kill them.
Yeah.
But if there's no missiles there, if there's just people protesting nonviolently, getting slaughtered, then the way the world is right now, as tightly wound as the world is right now and as connected as we all are, holy fuck, it would work so well. It's so much more powerful than bombs.
And what's another way? Because I'm a pussy. I don't want to see people dying. I don't want to give people the advice to go out there and become martyrs for freedom in a way that could kill them. What would be another way that we could, you know, what would be another suggestion that we could throw out there to? I'm just picturing these kids. I just picture some old man and just sitting around their iPod. Or their iPhone listening, and I want to give them. I would love to give some. What would be the ideal advice? Where, I mean, I guess that is good advice, but how could we do it? How would we do it?
You're already here's the thing. If you live in if you're a Palestinian right now, since they're bombing the shelters, you're
a target already.
The problem with that conflict is that there's closed borders.
Yeah.
So you have these people living in a place that's about the size of Manhattan, from what I've read.
Okay.
The borders are closed.
Ah.
They've closed off the ocean. So you are in.
So you're just you're being
exterminated.
Wow.
And so
I'm not as aware.
You're being exterminated. So you are in a situation where you don't know where to go because they just bombed a shelter and they killed, I don't know, I can't remember how much it was. It was like 130 kids, 50 kids. I can't remember. A lot of kids died from this bomb. So now here you are in this, it's like we're in Manhattan together getting bombed, and people are telling you, here's a safe place to go. It's a UN place. If they're not going to bomb it, you go there and you get bombed. So now it's like, oh, well, we're just getting exterminated. So the answer, if you can't, the answer would be, you know, if you don't want to fight back, get the fuck out of there if you can. Figure out a way to escape. Flee.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of there, right? Because the uprising isn't working. Shooting missiles at Israel clearly isn't working. You're outgunned. You're outmanned. There's nothing you're going to be able to do. Therefore, if you can't get out of there and you're already in a situation where you're going to die, then it seems like you'd want to figure out a way to get as many people to join together and do marches and peaceful protests.
I say strip it down. I say they all... Seriously, strip it. I now is seeing that makes more sense. Strip it down. I think they should just take all their clothes off and all walk naked, where they become so fucking human.
There you go.
Where just completely look old, young, all their color, all of that. Take it all away. Just human fucking beings, just walking. And they should just walk. They should just continue walking and just
Walk into Israel.
Yeah.
Walk naked into Israel with your arms stretched out and like, I don't know what it is. And God forgive me, because I really don't know. Like, I don't know why. I don't know what you're supposed, because I know some people over there, and I don't know if they have internet now, do listen to this podcast.
Mm.
And I remember like somebody emailed Joe and I, because they from Palestine, and they were talking about how there was bombs going off. This was a while ago, and they listened to our podcast, and like ever since then, you know, it humanizes people so much. They're just people, and the people in Israel are just people. And then when these bombs are hitting, it like creates something worse than anger in me. It creates just this sense of like, I don't know what it is, man. It's something that feels like heartbreak. And then you're like, well, what the fuck do you do? What do you do? You have to, you, I think that, that you have to,
play a commercial for Apple.
Yeah, guys, we're going to cut to a commercial for Apple real quick. I'm going to tell you what you do to solve the Middle East crisis. But first, let's cut to an Apple commercial. I don't know what you do, man, but I know.
I don't know. I think that it needs. I think that the fighting back and forth. That's not going to end it. I think it does need to be somebody just needs to. We have the potential to watch it change in front of our lives for the first time because we do have. I mean, I look at podcasts as pirate radio.
It is.
You know,
like
it's
that.
It's great because it's. I mean. It's pirate radio. So yeah, if you just walk around naked and
renounce your national identity, if you're an Israeli,
and walk right,
renounce
just
your
keep
identity.
Walking right through.
Yeah. If you're a Palestinian, renounce your identity. Everybody get out into the streets as quickly as you can. You need a very charismatic person among you who can speak in an articulate, non-shrill, hippie way, the way that I talk.
Get a child to speak for you.
There you go.
Get the children to sing a song that puts the world to tears.
That's it. That's what you need. You need stuff like that.
That's it.
And the more you do that, you know, and they're already, I mean, I don't know if you saw, there was a huge protest here in New York. A bunch of Hasidic Jews gathered together to protest what Israel was doing. It requires, like, in Paris, they fucked up because they started burning... I think they were burning synagogues and stuff. You know, it was violent.
Wow.
Violent.
Yeah.
Imagine this. Imagine if Martin Luther King had, I don't know, I'm sure you've looked at these because you're a photographer, but you've looked at these pictures of the well-dressed black people in the streets of Alabama
getting hosed
and beaten.
It's awful.
And those images were so much more powerful than if those black people had, instead of being hosed, had been kicking the shit out of the cops. Because the moment that they had done that, then everything's over.
There is a part I have, you know, the saying, an image speaks a thousand words, but I think it speaks a thousand languages. I think that if you get a strong enough image, people will resonate. You don't need to put a caption. People just can read it. I almost feel that it would be great. What was it? It's something like August 27th or something like that. There was do you remember in the 60s they had that Disney, the acid Disney thing?
No, what was that?
So, it's this, a bunch of hippies went to Disney and they announced, we're going to go to Disney and drop acid.
Wow.
And the National Guard was called in.
Wow, that's hilarious.
I mean, I'll butcher the story, but I'm sure people can Google that. But they showed up. There was not very many. They thought there was going to be like 30,000 people, and it was like 200.
Yeah.
Just dropping acid and having a good time enjoying the rides until they started working like clockwork and just moving everybody out and shut down Disney at 6 p.m.
Oh, my God.
But it would be great to go to these, to have some kind of, it's almost like, you know how improv everywhere?
Yeah.
You know how they just do goofy shit?
Yeah.
What if there was an improv everywhere for activism, but the activism isn't just weird shit. It's like humans everywhere. So
cool idea.
On the anniversary of that, that date, why doesn't a shit ton of people go to Disney with the purpose of stripping down and protesting and walking all the way through, or you know, and then where else would they go? I don't know. Disneyland and Disney World is all I can think of, but just or whatever, or because I think that, you know, people will put there. I think we've just lost sight of humanity,
yes.
And because we are wearing these cloaks, we're wearing these disguises, yes. And again, I don't think there's anything wrong with people dressing up and having their own style, and
sure, of course,
wearing, you know, it's a very conflicted part for me working in industry. It's so close to commercialism and so close to it all, and so I can respect both sides, but there is a part where there are people that go so far about it, and I think we've lost our identity with humans. It's like going into someone's house that doesn't have plants. I think that we're a society that doesn't see people.
Yeah,
you know,
we
see identities.
That's crazy. We're people blind.
Yeah, we just see two eyes wrapped up, you know, and in the summertime we see skin.
Yeah.
There's eyes somewhere, you know.
Yeah, right.
But I think that if we... I think that would be a great thing too, to show solidarity, is everybody start finding their thing. I mean, in Canada, they can go to the Calgary Mall or some shit and do this. But everybody just...
I like humans everywhere. I think that's really cool, man. And I think what you would need is, like, because I was thinking, like, I was getting so angry about and so dismayed. Like, I've just been fixated on this shit happening over there. And also the stuff in the Ukraine and the fact that somebody just blew a plane up with kids in it.
And AIDS researchers.
Yeah.
That is, like, you don't know about... Or you
no, I know about yeah, yeah. that. Like, just the
what flight was that?
All
though,
that was missing... All that was missing was, like, panda babies being transported. Yeah,
It's just a plane of love and goodness. Yeah.
Coming, everyone's stoned, coming from Amsterdam. It's like these AIDS researchers' kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... But I was thinking, like, I was thinking of, and I know this is all just so, in a way, it's empty, but I think anything that you, I know a lot of people get mad at, like, social networking protesters or social networking activism because it seems so lame or weak or something, but I think anything's better than nothing. And I was thinking about, and you feel so helpless anyway when you hear about this shit that you don't know what to do, but for a second, I'm like, all right, I'll just change my Twitter avatar to a Palestinian flag. And then I realized, like, no, because when I do that, I'm taking sides, which is why humans everywhere, it'd be really cool if somebody came up with a symbol for that so that you are aligning yourself not with any national identity.
Just a skin pore.
Yeah.
That's it. Just a skin pore. Everybody's got one. You might be, I was taking a hand. Someone's missing a hand.
I don't know, man.
Just this black and white skin.
Maybe
pore.
Someone will come up with it. You know, sometimes we spew these ideas out here and people come up and actually, like, follow through with them. So you never know. Sometimes, like, people will, like, do stuff, but some way for people to, like, you know, it'd be so cool is, like, a something you could say that's kind of blasphemous if you're super conditioned, where you renounce your national identity and become an earthling, you know, some kind of oath or a pledge of allegiance that isn't based on your national identity, or an oath you take or some weird thing you say where you permanently renounce forever your national identity and just consider yourself an earthling from now on. That'd be pretty fucking cool. You know, like, just, you know, whatever your national symbol is, you, like, publicly destroy it so that people understand that you're no longer. But that's a violent act, so maybe that's not.
Maybe just an easier way is just to transition into it, because you do need. It's like when you leave a cult and they bring in those specialists that will help you transition. And it's not you don't walk away from the cult and see your family and suddenly life is perfect. You have withdrawals from it.
Yeah.
So there is a transition and there's a window, and to respect the people that are still in it so that you're not, I hate you because you still have that American
flag. You just know they're in a cult.
You just know that they're in a cult and to walk away. And so, yeah, it's the culture of humanity, moving toward the culture of humanity. And maybe wasn't there was a language? Wasn't there a language?
Esperanto.
Yeah. What if that was brought back?
Yeah.
You know, these languages that are dying. What if we took a language that was meant to bring everybody together and just learning this?
Yeah.
What if it was, and we had teachers that would teach this, and we just moved, because everybody's
technology's going to take care of that, you know? Because what's going to happen is, remember, did you ever read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
I never read it.
Oh, it's really funny.
One of four people that haven't.
And there was a thing. There's actually a website called Babelfish where you could put in any language and it'll translate that language instantly, but that comes from Hitchhiker's Guide, because there was a little fish you could put in your ear called a babelfish, and it would change any language into the language that you understand. So I think technology is going to take care of that by making it so there's an instantaneous, when you could like have headphones in that whenever anyone around you is talking, it immediately will convert it into your language. So instead of having to go through the process of learning a whole new language, technology will be the new language. Technology is the new language.
Yeah,
you know, that's our connective neural connective tissue. But man, how much time? Shit, what time is it?
It's been an hour.
we got off course here.
Yes.
Before we wrap this thing up, I meant to talk, because we even didn't even talk about your job as a, I just said you were a photographer, but you're like a fat, you shoot for models. You're a fashion.
But I'm not a, I don't think I'm a fashion photographer.
Oh,
I don't, no, I think people people lump me in that community, but because I shoot with models, but I'm not, I don't see myself as a fashion photographer. I don't really care about the fashion as much. I have some fashion clients, but mine is more about art and ideas or concept or just beautiful images.
Well, this is what I wanted to ask you.
Okay.
Regardless of, I'm sorry, I know I didn't mean to like shove you in.
No.
And it's a cheesy question. So, and just
you're a fashion photographer.
When I ask it, you don't have to answer.
You know, how many times have you seen Joe's fashion photographer, Bruce Testinos?
No.
He made this video, it was when he had hair, of Bruce Testinos, this fashion photographer.
Hilarious. Haven't seen that.
I'll send it to you. You can put it up too. It's hilarious. Anyway.
Here's my question for you.
Yeah.
God forgive me. It's such a cheesy question, but I thought about it yesterday and it kept popping into my head. I just want to ask you this, so forgive me. It's such a dumb question. It's like a Miss America question. Can you, since you're always working with like really beautiful people and you're a photographer, can you define beauty for me? What is beauty? I'm sorry.
That is a tough one. Yeah, it is. It's a little cheesy. No, I'm kidding. It's good. No, it's a good one because I think that there's cheesy responses. Well, we're all beautiful. And you can go off of, some people will measure it through, they'll try to measure it through. This actually is a good question because I can break some of the shit, because they've done whole documentaries on beauty and they brought in photographers who are just staring at people. But I do think that, because, okay, so you get these attractive women, right?
Yes.
And they're symmetrical, but then you meet some of them and they're so beautiful inside, but then, you know, they're, others aren't, you know? So you can't take the beauty of the face value. That takes that away. I sometimes think that what happens, though, I think there's attractive and then there's beautiful. Mm. And so beautiful is pretty general, and I think everybody has beauty somewhere. And then when you get into attractive, then we're dealing with symmetry and things like that,
right,
that cut away with it. But I think that beauty is... It is the question that we all get asked, and I don't think I've ever been asked this question though, and I see other people respond to it, and I always think, that's so fucking stupid.
It's maybe it's an impossible question to answer.
I think it's a discussion though, because I think that people will have an idea of what it should be because of what they've seen, and one of the things that I do is from my work is that I try to find things that are interesting because I find that beautiful.
Yeah.
So I have a buddy that I brought on my podcast who does beauty photography, and his beauty, after we stopped the recording, we talked a little more, and it was we did it on the podcast, but he talks about how he wants very clear beauty, and I like interesting looking people. So when I cast models, I want somebody who has like big lips or big eyes or something special about them that makes it more interesting.
Yes.
But then I'll also find cases, you know, I got contacted by an agent to shoot this 35-year-old former Olympic swimmer, Casey Legler, who has this huge following of people because she was the first female model to work on the men's board.
On the what?
Men's board. So as a male model.
Oh, wow. Whoa.
Yeah, and she's just an interesting character. So they contacted me to shoot her, and she had just shot with two other, Cass Bird and Ryan McGinley, so two big photographers that have been around forever, and then they asked me to, and I basically built her book, and I brought her in a couple times to build this, and it was so fascinating. I mean, her world is fascinating because she's interesting, so that is beautiful. So yeah. I shot her to look like a man, and then I shot her to look like a woman, but not like, oh, it looks like a man. It was, this is a character. So I made her look like she's in the 1980s hanging out on the street when her business is not going well. You know?
Whoa, and, cool.
And so it looks interesting, or she's got a 9-to-5 job in Midtown. So that's interesting to me. And there's this girl that I just recently saw, her name is Boy Child, and she's this performance artist, and she smothers her face with paint and does all these crazy things. And that's more interesting to me. And that's beautiful because it's somebody who's has something inside. And so a lot of times when I work I work off of the character and the personality and the person.
Yeah.
And I don't really, you know, of course some people are more attractive and so it draws you in.
Yeah.
And if I'm doing just a visual, you know, just a visual and the body or the face works for it, that's that. But I really like the people that have something going on that's just different. You know, even when I shot you, that was the reason why, is because it's like you're a beautiful person. You're a beautiful.
You're beautiful.
Who's a pretty boy? Who's a pretty
boy? Damn, you are too.
But, you know, it's you have something beautiful going on. And Ram Dass, I sought that shoot out because it's beautiful. And then Sharon, you know, it's on paper. If you said that, if you asked a fashion, talk to a fashion photographer, or let me tell them, I'm going to Hawaii and I'm going to shoot an 82-year-old man
who had a stroke.
Who had a stroke in a wheelchair, and I'm going to shoot a woman who's larger in her, what is she, 50s, 60s?
I don't know.
You know,
Sharon Salzberg.
Sharon Salzberg, and I fucking love them. They're so beautiful. And when I told Ram Dass that we're shooting you for a fashion magazine, he's like, "What are you talking about?" He gave that look like this is. He looked at me. That's what he said. This is fashion. Sitting by the pool, like, yeah, it's fashion.
Well, it is, and it really, you know, because it's kind of like the to me, one of my favorite things about being around Ram Dass is within 30 seconds to a minute of being around him, you're not seeing an 80-year-old man who's in a wheelchair at a stroke.
Yeah.
You're just seeing love. And the physical form seems to be just something that is barely able to, like, surround this thing that's pulsating out of him.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is such a relief to recognize that no matter what your age is, no matter what your physical condition is, it is irrelevant when you connect to that deeper part of the self and really have the courage to just let that come out and not cover it up, like you're saying, with the clothes that you wear or the things that you veil yourself in. When you just, like, or your personality traits or what, or your, rather, your ego mechanisms, when that thing's shining out, you really it doesn't matter what you look like. You could theoretically be a reanimated human turd that some evil biologist brought to life. If you've tuned into the love inside of all things and that's shining out of you, chances are people aren't going to, well, they're going to see the turd, but not for long. It's going to, you're just going to see the love coming out. It's amazing.
Yeah. And I think that,
and
you, absolutely.
And you think you can capture that energy on camera?
Well, some stuff is so ineffable you can't do it. I did a project out in the Cascades, and so the art director or a friend of mine was, "Oh, shoot the Cascades or shoot the mountains," like, and I'd shoot it and it's, I can't capture this.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just gonna enjoy the moment because I can't capture this. And there's a part where maybe I'm just not technologically advanced enough to capture the wonder and the beauty and everything of the mountains. And when I look at the photos that I did with Ram Dass, I captured what I could capture, and there's a little bit of it, but there is still, like I said earlier, it's just a little bit, because there's so much more when you're around that, and when you're in that energy, you glow. And it feels, It there's this expansion. It's like going there is an expansion pack. It's that part of the Matrix where they plug you in. Instead of learning martial arts, you learn to, I'm going to accept myself.
That's incredible. That's a great way to put it. You mean where they plug you in and, like, they teach you all. Yeah, exactly.
I need to learn how to fly a helicopter.
You're getting encoded with something that you don't even, I still don't understand, but it does shift you in the same way like a great psychedelic trip does. It will transform you. And I think there's something good about the fact that you can't capture all of that, there is a need to be around a person, what do they call it? Darshan. There is a reason that you need Darshan with a person. Darshan is the term they use for when you're around a deity or when you're around a guru or a saint, they call it Darshan.
Okay.
And it's sort of like, this is what I think about with live comedy versus TV comedy. When you're watching TV comedy, you're seeing the language, you're seeing the mannerisms, the acting of the comic. But when you see live comedy, you're picking up a whole other thing coming out of them. It's a big, big difference. And So yeah, there's only a certain amount you can capture, but
And then you also screw with it once you get into editing. And I don't just mean, you know, with Photoshop and all of that, but also the layout of how it's how is it distributed and how is it seen. That can also affect right. it. You know, that television show, it's when you see it live, it's all around you and you have somebody laughing behind your head.
Yeah.
You know, that's a vulnerable thing to have somebody cackling behind your head. You know,
yeah.
And surrounding you. Well, you're also releasing your thing, and when you're sitting in front of a television that's been edited down and taken the cleanest spot. So yeah, it's there is something. What is it, Darshan?
Darshan.
Darshan. Darshan sounds like a good name for a kid.
Oh, Darshan.
Yeah.
That's a great, perfect thing to close this on. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you.
And thanks for a lot of other things, which I'm not going to yap about here because it's embarrassing, but you know what I'm talking about.
What are you talking about?
What's the, can you tell my, the people listen, let me just start over. I'm going to have to edit that because it sounds so retarded. You're like, can you tell my list, like they're mine?
Tell my bitches.
Can you tell the people listening how they can find you?
Okay, my website's Studio Donovan, and then so go to studiodonovan.com, and then I have a Tumblr, and it's all linked on there.
And what about your book?
I have my book, God and Drag, and named after Ram Dass's quote, treat everyone you meet like God and Drag, which was very interesting to try to explain that to people because they had just seen me shoot Casey Legler and thought, you doing some drag stuff now, boy?
Oh, boy.
But no, I have my book, God and Drag. It's sold on the website. Or there's a link to it on the website. Everything's on the website. And then I'm also doing my podcast that I'm just starting. And I don't quite have a name for it yet. I'm still, you're going to have to help me with that.
God and Drag.
I can't do God and Drag because I want to have it just slightly different. I did think walking home from Ram Dass's quote, we're all just walking each other home. But then I'm from Spokane, Washington. And Spokane means Children of the Sun.
Yeah.
Which sounds very hippie.
Children of the Sun.
Bringing
awesome.
Everybody in. I'm just, Children of the Sun. Welcome to the Children of the Sun. Or then I thought Sun people could. I'll work it out.
They're all good. Those are all. Children of the Sun's pretty badass, though.
It's hard to name something, though.
It sure is, man. It really is. But it'll come to you and you'll know when it's right. Like, it'll just pop into your head and you won't be able to forget it.
I was going
to
name my book Just the Tip.
Were you really? I'm glad you went with God and Drag. Well, I'll have links to all that stuff up on the website. Thank you so much, man. I hope you'll come back and do it again.
Definitely.
Okay. Hare Krishna. Thanks for listening, everybody. And big thanks to Harry's Shave Club for sponsoring this episode of the Doug and Trussell Family Hour podcast. If you like the podcast, please give us a nice rating on iTunes. Go through our Amazon portal and go through any portal that looks good to you this week. See you guys next time. Bye.